Thank you. I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. My name is Ashley. Good evening. Thank you very much. I'm feeling very awkward being up here in this particular moment with the view on either side. Thank you for the opportunity to share again. And what I was thinking about is, number one, so many people have mentioned their own sexual trauma since I shared this afternoon. And I'm very grateful that there is an all-female identified space in which all of us can talk about that in a way that is safe and mutually supported. I want to make sure everybody's safe. And if you don't feel safe, please get with someone who is safe. And it was interesting to me that I threw out there towards the end of my share, oh, by the way, I am an incest survivor and at least a three-time rape survivor. About that, I have no shame, because through this work, I've been able to put the shame back where it belonged, which was on the perpetrator. And another way that I've learned to talk about that in Al-Anon is that they had an impaired containment boundary, and they just put that toxic shame on me. I internalized it and believed it. And as many would say, you know, I make something up and then I hurt my own feelings about it. And there is a way to get through that. It's not necessarily direct and it's not always easy, but by God, it is worth it. And the principle of detachment in Al-Anon has gone one step further for me. It's not just the person or the situation. I love the neutrality, the spiritual neutrality of detachment. Where I've gotten to with it in my recovery at this time is that I've been given the gift of detaching from my own story. At first, my story, I couldn't even get it straight, because so many people and adults' reality contradicted it. Then I got my story straight, and then I got to have all my very justified feelings about it. Then I got to get past my feelings, and then I got to get mad that that was my story. And eventually, when I took the sixth and seventh steps in 2013, and by the way, can Shug just be the group dog at this point and wander around? Thank you very much. Now that I've outed her, and her real name is Shug and not Freddy, but it's y'all who have the rigorously honest program. When I took step six and seven, I went to a spiritual place that happens to be silent in order to do so, and they started talking to me, which, as you know me well by now, found very irritating, because I only want to be treated as special and different when it suits me, and that does not include in a Trappist monastery. And it was a man who spoke to me, so I thought, hot, I'm going to have an emotional affair with a monk. That's really cool. And did you run that by your abbot? And the moral of the story is, he asked if I wanted to visit one-on-one, and I thought, well. And I started to cry, and I fell to pieces. I could not stop crying, to the point where I was on my knees. I didn't even know if his order touched women, holding his garment and just weeping and bawling. And he started to stroke my hair, and he said, my child, what is it? And it's the only time I've ever used the D word, and it's not the word that we typically use in our culture. I said, dissolution of marriage. And then I got out my literature, and I said, I'm in a 12-step program, and I came here to take steps six and seven. And he reached it into the cloth of his garment, and he pulled out a 25-year medallion of Alcoholics Anonymous. At that time, he was celebrating 40 years in the monastery, so he did a little drinking in the monastery. He had a little mini fridge. He was the organist, so he got a little space where he could stash his stash. And when I took seven with him, the way I realized that up to that time in my life, it didn't feel like I'd ever had a love that didn't hurt. Love always hurt. I associated love with grief. I mean, that was my diagnosis before I got, literal medical diagnosis before I came to Al-Anon. Unresolved childhood grief. And I would sit in my little room at the monastery, and I would cry, and I would write these prayers for myself, because I couldn't find a seven-step prayer in our literature that seemed to capture the moment I was in. And this was my ultimate prayer that I took back to Brother Luke. And I was just crying so hard. I said, could my joy be of service? Because I already knew that my pain was here to be of service to another human being. All that survivor stuff is something, as I've said, from which I've detached. It is just something for a God of your understanding to use in your life as you may need it this time. So I said, could my joy be of service? And he said, God would be delighted. God would be delighted. And I've gotten that joy today. I am so in my body, and I turn cartwheels, and I do acro yoga, and I run races that I never thought I would run. And I was recently in three different countries. And when I look, I'm with forcibly displaced persons, survivors of mass rape, all kinds of stuff. And I don't even recognize myself in the photographs. I am radiant. I am radiant. I would think that I was like at a Kappa Kappa Gamma sorority party the way I was supposed to feel in 1988, but did not. And that is this beautiful detachment that I hadn't even read about yet in our literature that's happened to me. And I'm so thankful and grateful for it. And there was so much parent stuff that was shared earlier today. And I'll close with this. Our literature talks a lot about people who, you know, wipe tears from their mothers. And I was like, not going to happen to me. I believe your miracle. That's just not a miracle that's going to happen for me. And it has happened for me. You know, and I said to my mom on Mother's Day, I'm so glad that you're my mom, and I'm so glad I was born to you. And to be able to have that bubble up organically and to mean it is just precious. So keep coming back. Your miracle is your miracle, and it will happen. And the comma that's not in discussion, vote. I love that some of you wanted to look at my basket. You're very welcome to. And one thing that Al-Anon may have as a slight advantage with AA is that we work all three legacies in our literature. And AA doesn't offer you that at this time. I hope it will someday. And if you want to come take a look at it, I would love for you to. We also have a toolkit on resolving conflict. And it's using the 12 traditions to resolve conflict in relationships. And it's amazing. Talk to each other and reason things out. Get organized, agree on the guidelines, look at the role of the moderator, summarize. It's all about validating and healing. Thank you.
I'm trying to get out, but Debbie won't let me out. Sharon, alcoholic? Six and a half. Okay, bunch of things rolled through my head. One of them was I've dealt recently with my critical self, which has kept me down in life. Nobody's fault that I followed a very smart sister through school, and a lot of the teachers would say, well, you're Nancy's sister, and, you know, you should be getting straight A's, and what's with the B pluses? Or Nancy plays the French horn, the saxophone's easy, or, you know, things like that. It was a lot to... You know, she made the All-American Choir and all kinds of stuff. And the only reason I went to the White House was because she tried out for that same little contest as they picked two from every state, Young Citizens of America, we were called, and I beat her. So she didn't speak to me for, I think it was at least about a year anyway. But I've had this critical self, and I don't know if I was born with it. The alcoholism, the alcohol quieted it. The alcohol said, you know, the critical self got drunk. We had fun. But I wanted to share this because the day after I buried my husband, which was a beautiful memorial, any of you that were there know, any of you that saw anything about it know, it was perfect with a golf course, and the sun came out for the first time that year, and we had the Scottish bagpiper, and we had people talk, and we laughed, and my husband liked carrot cake, and people brought different types of carrot cake and oatmeal cookies, and people made oatmeal cookies, and my husband was he didn't like paper plates, so we had china. All of my girls brought their china, and we had silverware and china, and it was beautiful. There were sacred moments through that whole day. And I was woken up at 2 in the morning by my critical self after a beautiful day with so much love, so much honor, so much, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous just spread its wings that day. And it woke me up and it said, you were standing in the hot sun and everybody couldn't get through the line because it was too hot. And that video you showed, you should have shown that when this and that. I mean, and then nobody really understood the second line. We had a second line with the hankies, and we did it. We did it New Orleans style, and the happy music at the end. And it woke me up, and I was like, it just kind of like took it away. And I went back to sleep, and the next morning she did it again. It's like, oh, man, don't take this away from me. This is so important. And so I thought, okay, how do I make friends with this part of me? Because it's part of me. It's made me a survivor. I thanked it. I sat down with it and I said, thank you for making me a survivor in life. Thank you for giving me everything I need to get through the situations, and you made me a little smarter and a little more savvy to survive to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You were really good with helping me, and you made me a little more competitive in the male world of business and that kind of thing. So thank you, but it's time for you to go now. So I packed up a tuna sandwich and a paper bag, and I put her in the car, and I drove to a bus stop, and I set her off in the bus stop with a tuna sandwich, and I said, you've been great, but I don't need you anymore, and go have a good life. And she left, and then she showed back up again. She found her way home. But we're better friends today. And that part of me is part of me, so I can't throw her away. But there's times I don't need her. And I do have two more minutes. Yay, I wanted to tell you about my dad, because this is the ripples. We ripple. No matter what we do in life, we're throwing our little Zen stone in that pond of life. No matter what, and some of you are taking your mud cloths and muddying it up. I know you are, but that's okay. It clears up, and we can have our little Zen rocks and make a ripple in life, because we don't know where it ends. And I want to go out and smile at people I don't know at lunchtime. I want to be kind and be of service. If I can see or spot, I have my little Sandy Beach thing I wear. Let me be the least disturbed person in the airport or in the room or wherever it is. I pop that thing and try to stay calm when the rest of the world is reacting. And so my dad 12-stepped the town drunk, and I didn't know that. And this is a big ripple. I had no idea. The town drunk came to my dad, complained about his wife. My dad said, you know what? It's not Mary's fault. This is that small little town. It's not Mary's fault you're an alcoholic. My daughter went to AA and helped her. Maybe it'll help you, and here's the book. My dad had a stack of books by his chair. And the Alcoholics Anonymous book he got when he walked me down the aisle years before was still there. So I didn't know any of this, and my mother told me about it after the fact. And I went, wow, because we all knew the town drunk, he used to come to the house and he would want a bottle. And if my dad wasn't home, because my dad had a business and he had a bar, I would tell my dad he borrowed two bottles. And thank you, John, I got a whole bottle of booze just for myself. And I would, you know, poor John, he was like, my dad said you took two. No, I took one. No, it's whatever. But so John got sober, and my mother said he went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of those days in L.A. where you don't really want to be with somebody, you just want to go alone. I just want to drive alone, but it was raining, and I had to go to Thousand Oaks and speak, and I had to go all the way from near the airport. And it was a long, hard, arduous traffic drive, and not the carpool lane. You know, I didn't have anybody because I would be alone, so no carpool. And I finally get to this meeting, and it was just, I got there just in the nick of time, and I'm speaking. And I mentioned the town drunk. I don't know why I mentioned John, but I mentioned John. And after the meeting, this girl comes up to me and looks at me and says, can I talk to you? And she looked kind of familiar. And I thought, yeah. She said, I'm Lizzie. I'm John. He's gone a while. John Smith. I'm his niece. And I went home 2 years ago. I said, what are you doing here? I went home 2 years ago to a family reunion. And my Uncle John tossed at me, and I have 2 years. So that was a huge ripple. My dad had been gone a couple of years. It was a big hug back from my dad. It was a nod out to Alcoholics Anonymous. Make your good ripples every day. And when you go home, it's wheels down. It's just wheels down. Take it home, hit that tarmac, glide on in, let them know what a great time you had, and pass it on. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Debbie Davis, and I'm an alcoholic. And super happy to be here. There's only one woman in the world I know that could be such a love magnet to make this happen. Thank you, Polly. Thank you so much. And I'm just so honored to be invited. And for me, this is coming home. I used to live in Atlanta. And it means so much to me, and it's so funny. I had always wanted to be a Southern Belle, and so God started me off in South Dakota. Not exactly the most direct way, but I was working on it. And I ended up, oddly enough, last weekend I was in Minneapolis, which is where I got sober, and the next town I lived in was here. And my experience here, I was just shy of my fourth birthday. And it's like I could, you know, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my experience, Strength and Hope here in Atlanta, because I had so many changes happen to me here. And that was I rolled in just under 4 years, and I felt like I was in the sunlight of the Spirit. I'd been super active in Alcoholics Anonymous and service. And I got here, and if you've ever moved, I know what your first thought is. And it's, they don't do it right. Amazing how they've stayed sober till you got there. I know. It's just hard to know how they do that. And even goofy at 4 years sober, I knew that it was up to me to adapt to my new environment. And so the thing of it was, though, it was different enough that I made the decision, even though I had a sponsor locked in and my home group here was a Skyland group, I made a decision that 7 meetings a week is a lot of meetings, because I've been hearing about this balance, and I'm going to get me some of that in my life. What I did not know is I was about to balance myself out of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when you get balanced, most of the time the first thing to go is Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went very quickly from 7 meetings a week down to 2 or 3, which became 2. And the experience for the next couple of years for me would be a slow, incremental, gradual disintegration that's so small and unnoticeable until I'm 6 years sober and I'm arriving 5 minutes before the meeting and I'm leaving right after the shake, shake, amen. And now I'm back to got her done. Okay? It's a checklist item again. And at 6 years of sobriety, I was feeling so miserable. If this, you know, I think I got a pretty long life ahead of me, and if this is the way it's going to look, this isn't going to be too fun. So I found the solution that people, places, and things are going to make me happy. Now, the real term's called men, money, and mansions are going to make me happy, okay? That's what it's really called. And after two fellas, and who both married somebody else, at 6.9 years of sobriety, I came crashing down. I did not drink, but that being dry was all that was there. I was so sick with untreated alcoholism. And at 6.9 years of sobriety for me, it was like I took step one with alcoholism. When I got sober, I surrendered my powerlessness to alcohol. But it was at like 6.9 years, it was surrender to alcoholism. And I saw it in a very different light. And it was, the strength of that was that I had a solution. I never left AA, but I certainly wasn't having, you know, all kinds of people asking me to be their sponsor. In fact, I had the blessing of having really mainly one sponsee, Mary Emma. God bless her heart. She, you know, I sponsored her. And we walked through this path together. But what happened as a result of that is I really took the steps again for the first time, it felt like. I sort of bumbled and fumbled those first few years, it seemed like, as I looked back on it. But when I took the steps again, it was as if I had never seen them before. They were no longer just something on the wall. They were something that began to be incorporated in my life. And with that experience, moving into the strength of those steps, I got hope for a different way of life. And that's where that got really launched in my life. Recovery for me, even though I'd been sober and active in AA and service and so forth, recovery began there. And the hope and the courage to go from there on out was built on. So for me to get to talk tomorrow morning and share steps 10 and 11 with you, it's a real privilege, and I look forward to seeing you later. Thanks.
I got this. My name's Jesse Burghalter. I'm an alcoholic. Because of loving God and steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, people just like you. I've been sober since November 7th, 1981. And it's a great night to be sober. have to tell you a little secret about these ladies up here that I picked up on at dinner. I'm sitting there and I hear Sharon, Burkhalter. I'm like, yeah. What are we doing tonight? And then she goes, I said, I don't know. And she goes, I don't either. I don't either. Do you know? Nope. I don't know. We had not a clue. I just wanted to tell you that. And that's my experience, strength, and hope. No, actually what I want to do, I want to give you strength, experience, strength, and hope when they're really wrong. They. When they are wrong, pay attention. Because newcomers, this is for you. Two quick stories about my sponsors that will help you like me better. I'm at work and somebody does something really wrong. You with me? Wrong. So I made it through the rest of the day. I don't know how, but I'm driving. I'm sober. I am driving like a maniac to get home to call my sponsor who doesn't live in that town to turn them in. So, and I said, hey, hello. And I go, oh my God, it did it. You know how you can't, right? You got me? He goes, whoa. This sounds important. And I said, I'm talking. And this is a true story. So he goes, you know what? I'm going to get some coffee. And I said, okay, I'll wait. And he says, oh, no, you go ahead. I said, but if I go ahead, you won't be able to hear the problem. And he said, well, because see, when I get back, we're going to get to the exact nature of the wrong. And then we're going to move into the solution. So I really hope you have somebody that loves you that much. The other thing is that this is another time not to call. You wake up in the morning and you realize without question you are not being treated with the respect for which you deserve. It's clear. It's crystal clear. So I called and I said, you know, I'm working pretty hard. I said, are you precious? I said, yeah. Should have known to hang up. No, I said, and I'm wondering what I'm going to get. So I can pass it on and pass it on. Because you know when you say something that stupid, you can't shut up. So I just said, I just want to pass it on to all the people and help them. Oh, God, it was horrible. Anyway, let me tell you what I want to leave right here tonight. He said, I just realized that I have some promises for you and that I want to share with you that will come true for you. For the rest of your life, if you stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I promise. And here they are. If you do not take the first drink, you will never be drunk again. Let me tell you what I thought. He went to Texas Tech. So. Okay. You got it? Okay. Because you remember how brilliant I was, I told you? And guess what? Let me give you some experience of drinking hope. In 34 years, I've not had the first drink. So I've never been drunk again. I've never acted the way I acted when I was drunk. I never caused the problems to myself or to you. So I'll leave that promise here. I was promised that if I'd go to a lot of meetings, somebody like you, a lot of them, that I would meet people whose insides felt like mine, even if the outsides didn't look the same. You know, I didn't want to be the person who kind of looked to see what kind of car you drove or where you lived in town. I really didn't, but I didn't know, remember, I didn't know how not to. And let me tell you something. When I told you today, well, okay, they tell me I'm kind of sick and I've got some stuff going on. You know what I know happened immediately because I got to see you. You cared about it. And some of you, when you hit your knees tonight, will remember to pray. Are you kidding me? What an experience. I thought I'd always just have experience. But I can give you the hope to know that you do that and your whole world will change. I was promised, that's a promise I'll give you. Another promise was, what was it? If you study the literature, every problem you have and every problem you cause, the answers, the solutions are in the literature. What do you do with the textbook, professor? And I couldn't know. Remember, I'd edited it, but I hadn't studied it. I thought it was very archaically written. And the truth is that, and they would open their home and they'd have people come in. Can you imagine having this group right here in your den going through that book? I mean, seriously, and I've had the privilege of doing that, right? But I can give you a secret. When you open that book on about any page, it's telling you how to find a God and get closer to it. So, you know, that's a promise that I promise will come true. That any problem you have, just study the literature. And then he said, okay, if you'll work the steps with a sponsor. I'd done a few right before I had a sponsor. But I only had done the things that I thought were appropriate to me. And I really had. And so they get real touchy when you tell them, call and say, I just finished my third step. Yeah. So here's the thing. He said, if you'll work the steps with a sponsor, you can become anybody you want to be. I promise I'll shut up. Okay. You can become anybody you want to be. Now think about that. Did you think you were precious when you got here? Not many of us did. And I worked the steps and I am not the same person that I was. And he promised me that God would always be big enough. And if I wondered, I had to look at the judge and he asked me to say, yes, just give away a little bit and you'll get back tenfold. So look around.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jane and I'm an alcoholic. You know, that's good, John. That's perfect. Thank you. I get a little nervous with things like this so close to my mouth. You know, let me tell you, I feel the magic. I really feel the magic. And it's not because this thing's done. No. But what is on my heart to share is just the feeling of interconnectedness that I feel in the room tonight. And as I was sitting here, like, what the heck am I going to say? I just wanted to ruminate, and I would ask you to take a little journey with me and ruminate about the miracle of certain people being put in your life at a certain moment in time when you really need them. Or just, I know when I was newly sober, one of the things that I really needed to hear about were those, like, little coincidences that really let me know that I was in the right place. And I always think, like, God, all these weird, like, almost witchy woman kind of stuff happens to me a lot, like all those weird coincidences. And I think about how often that must have had when I was drunk or stoned, you know, like, but I just didn't realize them. You know what I mean? And like, I realize the magic now because I'm out of the fog. But, and I think about like the 6 degrees of separation kind of stuff, how we're all so connected. And I don't remember many of those when I was drinking. You know, I do remember one. I'll share like one really crazy small world story. But it was when I was backpacking for Europe. And the two women that I was traveling with were fighting. And I was just done with it. So I decided to take off on my own that morning. And I was in Vienna. And it was like, I don't know, like 10 o'clock in the morning. I had already had my, you know, my morning drink. And I smoked a big fat joint. And I went down to the train station. And it was Saturday morning, so it was pretty empty. And I was just feeling a little paranoid. Maybe it was, you know, the big fat thing that I just smoked. But all of a sudden, on the other side of the track, I heard, and it sounded like Frankenstein or something walking, and I was like, oh my gosh, what the heck is that? And I backed away, and the next thing I hear is, oh my God, is that Janie Dwyer? And it was, sure enough, it was one of my professors from, it was Brother Kevin from Manhattan College, who had a club foot because he was in a motorcycle accident. You know? And it was like, what the heck? I was freaking out. And then that kind of stuff happens to me all the time too in sobriety. Like, it's just small world, crazy, random stuff. And I think about, like, just how, oh, and there's some woman here who was in my first, there she is waving her hand, who was in my first AA group when I walked through that door on a walker with the Philadelphia neck brace. I could barely move. Going to that AA meeting in my first group in St. Pete. What? It's just unbelievable. And I have to share this too. When I got out of prison, you guys met my therapist last night and my friend when I asked her to stand up, but she took me to my first AA women's retreat right when I got out of prison. It was when the first month that I got out of prison. And I met her through the Catholic priest that I did my fifth step with in prison, so that's even more interconnected. And sure enough, I went to a women's retreat in St. Simon's Island, and guess who the first speaker I ever heard was? Polly. So that, when she was sharing her story and talking about her sons who she neglected in her alcoholism, little did I know that someday I would be marrying one of them. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's just crazy. And then just even my dear beloved sponsor, Diz, who I loved so much, and how I knew it was his silent wish that I ask Amanda to be my sponsor. And I really didn't know her that well. But I knew that's who I had to have. And now she's like, you know, got my heart, and she's one of the best things that I have in my life. And that's just like, I mean, think about some of the coincidences that you've, you know, experienced. It's amazing. It's definitely magic. And anyway, it's also God telling me that there is a God indeed, and that this is all part of the plan. Tonight is part of that plan. And I feel so honored that I have, I'm privy to receiving the hugs and getting the little secret messages that women share and whisper in my ear about, you know, something that I said. I've actually met so many who had DUI manslaughter like I did, and I was able to, you know, maybe give them some hope. But they also, more importantly, gave me hope too. And, you know, how amazing, again, this, and many of the speakers touched on it, how it's like all these roots, you know, that lead everywhere, and how lucky we are that we're a part of this planet, a part of the solution, and that we carry love with us wherever we go, and we practice these principles in all our affairs, then how can you not love us, right?
I travel with my own fan club, so. My name's Beth Hartley. I'm an alcoholic. And because of God's grace, AA, and sponsorship, I've been sober since June 26, 1988, and that just blows me away. Sharon was one of the first people I heard. I went to the Kentucky State Convention in, it may as well have been in Cincinnati, it's right across the river. It was the first time I'd been in Northern Kentucky. I think she was all of 13 years sober when she spoke there. It was 1989. I had about 7 months. She's my hero. I was a biker. Anybody who can live above a biker bar and get the police called on them because they're fighting so loud the bar is being disturbed is my hero. All these years later, she's still giving me hope. This critical self thing, I'm like, oh, you mean by the time I'm 40, I will have it down to one voice? I have a committee. And they, you know, I don't want to, like, depress the newcomers here, but I still... I try not to meet with them often. I just let them, you know, my sponsor a long time ago said, appoint a sober chairperson, just get out of there. But every now and then I will still wake up and it's like they're on the end of the bed saying, thank God you're up, we have to talk. And so you just, I don't know, they're just, they amuse me now, mostly. But I, you know, if you had told me in 1988 or any time prior than that, that not only would I be spending an entire weekend with 700 women on purpose, but that I would be happy about it, I would have been like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like they don't tell you everything when you're new for a reason. I was not, you know, I mean, I came in, I didn't walk through the doors of AA and go, oh, thank God I'm home. You know, I spent a lot of years trying this anything but AA, please. And we didn't have hashtags back then, or I probably would have been like, hashtag, you know, anything but AA. But there's probably one out there now. But I, you know, I didn't want to be here, and I finally, you know, I finally came and stayed because I figured out I wasn't going to die. And if they had said, you'll be dead in 6 months, I would have been like, awesome, let's go for it. But I realized, I was 29, I realized I was going to live. And I was going to live 40, 50, 60 more years drinking or not drinking, and that scared me to death. And so I just kind of had this passing thought of, well, you know, those people in AA, whatever they're doing is working, and what you're doing isn't. You know, the best plan has failed miserably, and I had no friendly direction, and I just had it. Now, I thought I'd go down in flames. I'm a biker, for God's sakes, but I just kind of had this pitiful kind of, well, screw it, you know. That was my big surrender, and I walked in, and, you know, I get up to the clubhouse when I get out of detox, and one of my ex-bartenders is on the floor. We looked at each other and said, I thought you were dead, you know. But they said hang out with the women, and I did drive-by AA for about 5 years, you know, like get arrested, go to AA to stay out of jail, you know, hang out 2 weeks, drink, rinse, lather, repeat. And so... But I would pass through and they go hang out with women, and I would just think, no, you know, I mean, in high school when the girls drank, it was just embarrassing. I mean, you can't drink with amateurs. They giggle, they fall down, they throw up, you know, they wear pink in public, you know, they, and then the husbands, and that's very messy. That's confusing. And so I drank with guys because I could keep up with them all. I could drink the guys under the table. Why would I hang out with women on purpose? You know, but of course now I will tell you, hang out with the women, honey, you know, but what happens here, and I think Sharon said something about Don Pritz, who was another one of my early, early heroes, and he said, I'm so glad I get this 6 minutes, because I've been like, you know, I'm last tomorrow, which normally I just revel in getting the last word, because I can kind of correct everybody else's mistakes, but this group, I'm just like, after Sharon today, I'm like, I'm just going to hand out some Kleenex and play another song, and, you know, we're good. I have nothing, you know, I have pages of notes. So, but Don always said, truth without love is brutality. And I always thought I was really honest, and I got sober and I found out that what I really was mean. Because I would tell you the truth, but I offered no solution after that. You know, if I could leave you laying bleeding on the floor, then yay me, I win. You know, Beth wins. And so it's like having learned here, you know, sometimes the truth, you know, thank God my sponsor tells me the truth. Somebody who just tells me what I want to hear will kill me. I mean, the voices in my head don't even tell me what I want to hear, you know. And so it's like, but we don't ever tell you the truth without saying, now how can we get through this together? You know, the second meeting I went to, out of detox, I had already figured out the clubhouse thing because I didn't want to be new. Nobody wants to be new. So I sat in the second row because if you sit in the back, we know you're new back there. You know, and if you sit in the front, you might have to talk to somebody. So I sat in the second row against the wall because this was an old house that was converted, right? So maybe one person I'll have to talk to. So now it's time to say the Lord's Prayer at the end. And I got no handhold. I have no handhold. There's a wall. What a loser. They're in full committee meeting. Everybody, nobody likes you. Everybody can see you don't have a hand to hold you. What a loser. Can't even say the Lord's Prayer right. You know, they're all looking at you. And so I just put my thumb in my pocket and hung my head and held this hand, you know, and whoever was in the front row turned around and took my hand. And I started to cry and cried through half of the Lord's Prayer, and then I had to stop the other half because I'm a biker and you can't see me cry. I have to kill you. And but you know, we get talking about 12-stepping a lot of times, and it sounds like you have to sponsor 80 people or 12-step calls or whatever. But I got to tell you that remembering a new person's name is 12-step work. And what that person did that night for me was 12-step work. And they didn't say a word, but they said, "You are not in this alone. We will do this together." And I was so relieved that somebody took my hand. That if you ever see me in a meeting, like, we're not starting that prayer till I know everybody's got a hand to hold, you know. Alcoholism has the ability to make any of us feel alone in a room full of people. That is the isolating factor of this disease. And I can be in a room like this and feel alone and isolated and different and have to fight that flee reflex. You know, and whoever, I never have found out who took my hand that night. But they're the reason that I came back the next day. You know, and we get here and we learn to die to self and we learn to get rid of these character defects. And, you know, I never thought of putting, I'd have to rent a van for my committee, but I couldn't just put them on the, you know, one on the bus. but there's this one, I pulled out some song lyrics because, and it's a really short song, Mrs. Brown. And I am not singing, but this song is called So Long Self, and they're talking about when they found God. And it's so long, so, you know, if I come across a little bit distant, it's just because I am. Things seem to feel a bit different. You understand, believe it or not, life is not apparently about me anyways. But I've met the one who is really worthy. So let me say, so long, self. Well, it's been fun, but I have found somebody else. So long, self. There's just no room for two, so you're going to have to move. So long, self. And then at the end, it's like, stop right there. I know what you're thinking. No, we can't be friends. And even though I know your heart is breaking, this has to end. And come to think of it, the blame for all this simply falls on me for wanting nothing more in life than all of this. Can't you see? Don't feel so bad. Don't feel so bad. There'll be better days. Don't go away mad, but by all means, go away. So long, self.
And so the ex-nun follows the ex-biker girl. Yeah. Whoever said this isn't a weird gathering. My name is Mildred and I'm an alcoholic still. Polly mentioned Nita, who has done us all a favor. Nita is here now. Stand up, Nita. Thank you. Nita's part of the Tennessee crowd, and I shouldn't do this, but I will. That Tennessee crowd put on a Woodstock in April, and you may want to search that out because it's really a great event, isn't it? Yeah. Some of you have been there. So, some of you have, well, first of all, imagine me in a room with 700 women. Not an ideal situation, I would think. And a different situation. Because I come from a place where I don't like women, and I come from a place where I live in my head and not in my heart. And, you know, though I'm 43 years sober, in case, young lady, you got, who's 3 days, you know, don't get the idea that when you're 43 years sober, you're done. Polly just said she thinks I will die either behind a podium or where was the other place? At a meeting. Maybe I should avoid podiums and meetings. Just as a way of getting a long life. Well, several of you have come and talked to me about my sister Doris, so I'm going to tell you a story. That'll be my contribution. And by the way, Sharon said she wanted to be one thing and she wound up in South Dakota, Iowa. I wanted to be a New York girl, and I wound up being born in Saskatchewan. How do you like that for an irony? Anyway, Dora. As I said last night, Dora never learned to read and write. Dora knew she was different, and for years fought that. And I believe that God does work through us, but we have to remember it is that power that is at work. That's what the deal is. And that has been shown to me over and over and over again. And I see it in my life now because about, 6 or 7 years ago, you know, it came to me. You live in your head, kid. You do not do much about the heart work. And so my journey at this point is about learning to open my heart and to be at this thing with all this emotion and all this loving and all this. Part of me is uncomfortable with it and part of says, bring it on. You know, because it's just a new way of doing things. And I can understand why I was motivated to ask Polly to be my sponsor and am willing to participate in that family process, even though I've never participated in a family process ever because of the isolation, the inner isolation, not the outer isolation. I'm a great actress. And anyway, back to Dora. I spent my life, or a lot of my life, and certainly my formative experience was all about, I've got to do something to change the world for Dora, and it didn't happen. And when I was, Dora died in at the end of 1998, I believe. But about 3 years before that, see, my parents had died, and she had lived with them. And when they died, my father left her well provided for, but didn't want her going to an institution. So one of my sisters and her husband and family took Dora in and gave her a family. And one day when I went to visit there, she pulled me aside as we were saying goodbye. And I hugged her. And I understood something that day. It felt to me as if something had moved from me to her in that hug. And I knew that Dora used to love to rock my niece's babies. And at one point, they said, "Don't let Auntie Dora rock us anymore." And my niece said, "Why not?" And they said, "Because she holds us so tight, we can hardly breathe." And that day I understood. I come from a family of stiff German extraction. And we weren't a huggy business. We weren't a huggy family. We were a loving family, but we weren't a huggy family. And it seemed to me that day when I hugged her, it was that same feeling of that love passing from me to her, not just in kind actions, but in a physical sort of way. And just as I was getting into the car, she said, she whispered in my ear, she said, "Do you still cry yourself to sleep at night?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Neither do I. I'm happy now." And when I got back to Toronto, Father O'Brien, by this time, what a wonderful man. He too has died within the last 6 months. And I went to talk to him and I told him about this. And he said to me, "You really are thick, aren't you?" And I thought I was, and he said, "Don't you understand something?" He said, "You think you can fix things by writing another essay or reading another book or something intellectual." He says, "God doesn't need that. Do you not understand that it is God that has fixed that? God has brought that about through the events of her life without the fact that she, you know, as I said, she never learned to read. So she was dependent but God was present in her life. And then the day came, and this, again, is the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. One day a friend phoned me and said, this would have been about 3 years later, a friend phoned me and said, I better hustle. I will. Told me about her mother dying and what she had done. And my brother-in-law called me about 6 months later, and he said, Dora is dying, and you better get here. And that day, my sponsees were there. They got me a ticket, and off I went to Saskatoon. And I got to the door, and I knew what to do, because this friend who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, she knew what to do when her mother was dying. She told me, and I got to stand at Dora's bedside for the last 18 hours and prepared her and helped her through the gates, where I am sure she's happy now. So I am so happy to be here. Thank you so much again, Polly, for inviting me. God bless you.
Hi, my name's Carla Rowland, and I'm an alcoholic. Whenever I hear those footsteps coming behind, I know Amanda is on the job. Woo! So I had like three stories that I could think of. So, but Amanda's back there, so I'm gonna probably get away with one. But I thought, out of all of those, I want to tell this story because it was a direct result of being here at Girl Stock. And so, okay, and being of service. You know, we just say yes. From the very beginning, from the time I walked in to Alcoholics Anonymous with any sincerity at all, and the secretary asked me to read the closing portion of Chapter 11 that we read at the end of a lot of meetings, I said yes. And when I read, I started to come into the room, just like I do every time. And I started to, when I would say yes to the things you asked me to do, I started to notice the absence of the noise on the inside of my own head, you know, just for a little while. I mean, that was before I even had a step. Before, you know, it was just being here with you. That's how big the spirit was. Well, so over time, let's see, 2 years ago, not last year, Girl Stock, but the year before, I was the voice here. So I was out here, and just, you know, I have a prayer and meditation practice, a daily practice, and I try to stay awake. You know, and sometimes I change up that practice. It's been different over the years. You know, it started out reading and sitting and smoking sometimes, and you know, then rollerblading and surfing and dancing and all of those things that started to wake me up, to open me up to that intimacy. I'm not saying dancing is. Don't come up to me and say dancing is the answer. I didn't say that, but. But it answered questions I didn't even know to ask then. You know, it opened me up to a kind of intimacy. Anyway, and now I have a real sitting practice. And you have to stay awake to the hints, to the Steven Spielberg said that inspiration or fate comes in with a whisper. God, how did he put it? Anyway, it comes in whispers. God's voice comes in whispers. And so I have to be awake to him. And anyway, I had left a profession I'd been in for 21 years. You know, it was a good living, but I was done with it. I was done with it. And I was a compliance officer in the year of too big to fail, right? So there's like, well, anyway, it was a big joke. And so I left, and I had spent a few years, you know, doing odd jobs. I mean, real odd jobs, like being a chauffeur and driving a limo. And, you know, and I ended up at Home Depot. So I was at Home Depot with my orange shirt. And, you know, and it was kind of appropriate because I'd been considering entering a monastery. And this was just a couple years ago. I considered entering a monastery, and instead what I got to do at 2:30 in the morning was wax on, wax off with the appliances. They put me in charge of cleaning the appliances, so that was good because I thought if I was in a monastery, they'd make me do that there anyway. So Home Depot became my monastery, and I'm trying to stay awake, you know, in my life and watch the hints because, you know, I'm hoping I don't have to wear this orange shirt forever. Although I'm having a little bit of fun, it's not as fun as I thought it was going to be. So I came to Girl Stock. I said yes to an invitation to come out and participate one more time, be the voice. I came out and I was leaning on the registration counter and I had a sore neck. And I was just, you know, just standing here like this, waiting to talk to whoever was behind the counter. And Donna H. came up behind me and she put her hands on my neck and she just squeezed in all the right places. And I said, wow, you really seem to know what you're doing, don't you? And she said, well, I'm a massage therapist. And I said, really? And I looked at her and I thought, we're about the same age, I think. And I said, well, I always thought I was too old to do that. I had really given up over when I was going through my index of what can I be next? What am I going to be when I'm trying to grow up? I thought I was too old. And she said, you're not too old. You can do it. And so, anyway, that was a Saturday. Then Jennifer and I had a little Reiki session. And then Monday afternoon, I was on the computer at home looking at schools. And then it said, you know, how much the school cost. And I thought, oh, geez, I don't even know. And then it said, well, you can apply for help and all this stuff. And I don't even know. If this is going to happen. I don't even know if I'm supposed to be doing this really, but it kind of felt like it. I just kept doing it. So anyway, I go to school and I ask all the questions. I go to the finance lady and talk to her. And then I come home and I talk to Doug. And a lot of you guys know Doug, you know, just the happiest man on earth. And I have to be careful what I ask him for because that man would move heaven and earth to give me what I want. So I want to be careful about that, the things I say out loud. And I didn't want it to be one more jolly jaunt down the, you know, down the happy avenue. I wanted it to be, So I go to school. So I tell him this, my concerns. I have to go back to the school that afternoon one more time and ask a bunch of questions. And he goes, so he's coming out of the shower. He's naked. I'm going into the shower. I'm naked. There's a visual for you. And we're standing in the bedroom. He says, let's just pray. And I said, okay. So we stood there and we prayed. We said, you know, we don't know if this is supposed to be or not. So we got to leave it up to you because we can't decide. We've got two heads here and we can't figure it out. You know, but it seemed like maybe. So anyway, he went off to his meeting. I went off to jury duty. And then on my way home, I had to stop at the school to ask the rest of the questions, right? On my way, by the time I've had the whole day to think about it, I go right past the school. No, it's too much. It's not right. It's just not right. And then I passed the school and that wasn't right. That really wasn't right, right? So, because I've been listening. And so I pull back and I go to the school. It doesn't hurt to ask questions. It doesn't cost any money to ask questions. So I go in. I ask all the questions. I went, oh. So I called Doug and I tell him what's going on. And he said, and it was all in order. And he said, well, let me tell you what happened. So he had gone to his meeting and his sponsees had asked him what's going on. He told him what was going on, what we'd prayed about. And then after his meeting, then his sponsee came up to him and he said, I'll give you the money. If you need the money, I have the money, and you can pay me back when you want. Well, he didn't want to take money from a sponsee, but what I saw that as was the green light, that the money will be there. The money will be there, and as it has been. And I still, you know, and to reach way back into the soul of, you know, the awakening, God trying to whisper at us, and maybe keeps at it until we finally listen. Is that when I was living up there on the mountain in the tent, we used to go and trade get clothes and boots and things out of this box behind this co-op that was down in town. We'd go in there and we'd get boots. I got a pair of boots one time like that, and I would get these books, and there would be these awesome books on like massage therapy and all these healing books that I couldn't hear because I was drinking moonshine and homemade beer, but I really liked what it was, you know, and I practiced it and fell in love with it and did it on a non-professional basis for a really long time. And so then after all this time, because I said yes and because I continue to say yes, I ended up in a Girl Stock finding out what I'm going to do for the next maybe 20 years of my life if I live, you know. I don't die at the podium like the rest of you, but... but I am... I said that out loud. And I'm going to say this too, and then I'm going to sit down because I'm apparently getting away with it. Every once in a while, you know, I've got that thing in my head, that voice. Every once in a while, I got to redo the whole day, and then, oh, if you'd only, and if I'd only. But once in a while, and it was just not long ago, the other day I was standing in my kitchen, it was starting again. God dang it. It was starting again, and I stood there and I said, enough! Shut the hell up. Only it wasn't hell, it was another four-letter word. And fear skulked away like a little bitch.
Want you to know I didn't stand up till 7.5 minutes. And I also want you to know now I know how that woman felt at International when they wouldn't let Mel sing. Ooh. Yeah. Thank you so much, panel. I do want y'all to know we don't tell the panel the question ahead of time because we don't want them to think about it. We don't want them to worry about it. We want it to be from the heart and on the fly. And I think that they did an excellent job. What do you think? Now, as we're getting ready to close, you can stay standing. I want to do something a little special. If the front row can help us do the hold hands up here so they don't have to come down yet. Everybody join hands.